you wake in a strange room. Your clothes are foreign, and the walls are covered in objects from a different world. You don't know where or when you are, or if you're still dreaming. There are footsteps in the hall. Jumping up, you race out of the room and into the streets. You have just entered the Twilight Histories.
Hi, I'm Jordan Harbour. You're about to hear the continuation of the epic Romano-Saxon War by Josh Hutchins. This is the audio version of our first Twilight Histories book, written by Josh Hutchins. If you're enjoying this series, I highly recommend you pick up the book. And now, on to the story.
Kynhard strikes the man with the back of his hand. Red lines form on the man's face.
We already know this, Roman. All the world knows the Emperor withdrew his authority from Britannia. Tell us, how many soldiers are on this frontier? How many are within a day's ride? How many are in the Kestra, on the other side of the river now? Who commands?
I look all around the small grove of trees we currently occupy. The dark emerald pine needles, the bare white trunks of aspen trees, a thin blanket of snow slowly melting.
If you don't want to hear things you already know, then you must know I will not answer any of those questions. Go back to your goats, Saxon. Leave the fighting to the men.
Kynhard draws his fist back. Praxos grabs his elbow.
That won't help, Kynhard. You've gotten all you can from him. Let me try now.
Kynhard's body seems to lose its tension and deflate. He nods.
What is your name?
Praxos asks in an even, calm tone.
You already know that.
The Roman spits a wad of blood and saliva in the snow.
Please, just answer.
The Roman stretches his shoulders and adjusts his bonds.
Tuco. My name is Tuco.
Praxos calmly sits on a large boulder opposite the Roman.
What is your current duty assignment, Tuco?
I am a Velite. Assigned to the 9th Legion at Viterracastra.
And what were you doing at Niger Megan?
He huffs out of breath.
I was guarding the Saxon prisoners. A work detail, that is all. I never mistreated any prison.
Praxos holds up a hand and waves it dismissively.
Yes, Tuco. And I know what you're thinking. We already know all of this.
Praxos brushes some dirt off the knees of his breeches and looks at me. Then he turns back to Tuco.
What do you know of us?
Tuco seems to perk up.
I know you're Saxons.
He pauses, as if that, by itself, would satisfy his questioners. Then he gives a thin smile.
I know you have women in your army. I know you've attacked Roman Winter. Something strange indeed. I know your army received provender by way of boats on the Isil River.
He creases his brow.
I know you possess strange new weapons to shoot arrows and bolts. Were you at the battle 4 days ago, outside Zenitin?
Kynhard blurts out. Praxos gives him a look. His eyes like slits, then turns back to Tuco.
Well, were you?
Tuco nods.
Yes, I was there. I fled just after our cavalry was crushed by your own. Many others fled with me. We swam the Rhine, freezing cold as it was, and took refuge inside the Kestra. But I was at the very front of the counterattack across the breach.
Praxos arches an eyebrow and turns to look at me. He begins talking before he turns back.
What counterattack?
Tuco gives Praxos a wary look.
What counterattack? You mean you don't know?
I'm asking the questions, Tuco. Now tell me about your counterattack.
He shrugs.
We formed up on the far side of the bridge, well before sunlight. Snow was starting to fall. Lucius Sextus believed...
Who is that?
Tuco seems stunned. He doesn't blink. A moment later, he tightens his jaw and shakes his head.
Sextus is the commander.
He answers in a defeated tone.
Indeed. What did Sextus believe?
He believed such a counterattack would be successful because you Saxons would be unprepared. All the barbarians, especially those from Britannia, have a tendency to drink to excess after battle. They neglect their defenses. We were sure that would be the case again.
Praxos and Kynhart both flash me an approving grin.
But, Tuco continues, we began the advance across the bridge and saw your front gate opened wide in full light of burning torches nearby. It seemed too easy. I was in the very front rank. Those around me began murmuring of a trap. We saw nobody. No guards. No sentries. No pickets. Nobody except one man. One naked man. Standing there in the cold, in the center of the open gate. We marched closer, seeing his eyes were closed. His pale skin seemed set in stone, for he neither shivered nor moved. It stopped the front rank dead in its footprints. We stood there, watching him. I remember Sextus pushing through the formation and standing in front of us watching the naked man.
Tuco adjusts his position again. Clearly, the discomfort of his bonds is getting to him.
I know not what Sextus thought of this. I only know he turned and ordered us all back into the Castra. I presumed he sensed an ambush or a trick. The man stood there until we crossed back over the bridge. What he did then, I do not know. His shrunken penis probably froze off if he stood there much longer. The next day, I was sent to the guard detail at Niger Megan.
Praxos stands and gestures me away from the Roman prisoner. Kynhart joins us.
Did this happen, apprentice?
Praxos asks me in a hush. I nod.
You stood naked in snow to bluff the Romans?
How do you know it was me?
He beams a broad grin. Please, apprentice, come on. Tiny shrunken penis. Who else could it be?
I frown at them.
They caught us off guard. Everyone was drunk.
I didn't see any other way to save the army.
Praxos rubs his temples. So your solution was to get naked in the snow, open the front gate, and face down a Roman army alone? I'd almost prefer you challenge the Roman commander to a duel.
3 days, apprentice. We were gone only 3 days. 1 day to travel to Niger Megan, 1 day to rescue my sons and over 100 other prisoners, then 1 day to get back here. Cannot you cease your insanity for this long?
No, Kynhart,
Praxos interrupts.
He did that mere hours from the time we left.
Yeah, left and didn't tell me, by the way. Let us not forget that.
What are you, our mother?
No, I'm your commander, I snap. They seem stunned. I take a breath. You two were gone. You didn't tell me. The army was drunk. There was only me and Ingrid and a handful of guards. We had no hope against the Romans on the bridge. No hope. I won't chastise you for you leaving me in the dark in your little excursion, but please understand that I saw no other choice than to
show your penis to a Roman army?
Kynhart purses his lips.
Makes sense to me.
Praxos takes in a deep breath, then blows it out.
very well. If there was ever a doubt that you were crazy, apprentice, that doubt has now been removed. Forever removed. And lucky to boot.
He rubs his temples again.
Well, I guess I'm glad to hear this now, before we made it back to the camp and heard it from the others.
This is the first I've heard it from the Roma perspective. I intended for them to sense a trap, but I didn't know for sure until hearing it from Tuco here. Our entire army by now knows what I did. They know it seemed to work. But I don't know what they think of it other than that.
They probably think you're crazy too,
Kynard says.
Or a wizard,
Praxis says, shaking his head. He turns back to Tuco.
What of Rome herself?
Tuco looks up.
Goths. Alaric.
He straightens.
Rome has fallen. They slaughtered most of the women and children like pigs. But the Emperor survived. So that's...
Praxos draws his sword and swings it upward like a fan.
He slices off Tuco's face, and the meat and skin slips away from his skull and falls to the ground with a soft splat. He claws frantically at where his face used to be, but only for a moment. His arms drop lifelessly to the side of his body, and it tumbles.
Well, I certainly hope we didn't have any more questions for him.
Praxos breathes through his nose, heavily panting breaths, his nostrils flaring, his lips are tight.
I'm sorry. When he said the women and the children, all I could think about was...
He sighs, then wipes the blood and brains off his blade in a nearby tuft of grass.
You know, apprentice, I am glad I didn't kill you back then. I would have been deprived of all this excitement.
I cock an eyebrow at him.
Your memory is slipping, Kynard. I almost killed you. Were you? I remember feigning an injury as you clumsily approached me. Hink stole that victory from me.
He huffs. Then turns and smiles at me.
But it's all for the good. Otherwise, I may have never known you in Praxos. After our first meeting with you, Romans and Britannia, I did not think you would be very difficult to defeat.
You mean when you fought Maximian? Thorium?
Yes, it was quite a sight.
He looks down at me.
Did not Thorium tell you what happened?
No, Kynard. He must have skipped over that part just before he accused me of raping his wife. Kynard seems to tense at that. Praxos sheathes his blade and spits on Tuco's body. Glycerin told me Thorium ordered a charge. I don't remember him saying much more about it.
A charge? That is putting it mildly, apprentice. When Hinkston and I went to talk with Thorium, or whoever the Roman commander was, they just charged at us.
I frown. Thorium led a charge?
I only saw Thorium briefly when I was your prisoner in his audience chamber. But I would remember his face. And no, he did not lead the charge. It was a very old man with white hair.
Maximian? Maximian led the charge? Kynard shrugs.
That was their plan. Charge. Get him.
Praxo shakes his head and looks at me.
Seems like it may be in your blood too, apprentice.
He flashes me a toothy smile. I stare down at Tuco's body. Blood slowly oozes from his head. I wrap my cloak tighter around me, then turn back to Kynard and Praxos. Why didn't Hink stab you in the back then? I frown. Why did he wait until after we were fighting? He probably could have killed you just as easy in that first battle. Praxos examines his hands.
Maybe he was waiting for something.
Waiting for what? He shrugs.
Maybe that second message from Britannia had more to it than we thought.
Kynard nods his head.
Before we went on raid to Britannia, we discussed in council. When I went to the raid, I gave up my position on the council. Daragos is sister of the former chief Wolfnoth. Wolfnoth was a great man, but he had no children. Daragos and Hinksfer in the council discussions too. I remember they wanted to join with the Romans in Britannia, not raid them. They were the peaceful faction, they said, but once it was clear they would not prevail in council, Daragos insisted Hinks be second in command on the raid. It made sense. I brought largest group of men, Hinks brought second largest. I wonder if the second message contained motivations for us to ally with Britannia.
Ally with Britannia?
Praxis asks. His face nodded with incredulity. You never know what Thorin may have cooked up, but that would explain why he made Hinkst his captain of the guard. Kynhard runs his grizzly hand through his coarse beard.
Hinkst's father was a man named Bregdor. He was a wealthy man, but had no position on the council. He died years ago. Einar is Hinkst's half-brother, both sons of Bregdor. Neither of them has a path to the power here in Saxony. Certainly Daragos knew this. Perhaps she and Hinkst saw this as a way to power, just in Britannia instead.
Maybe we're out here on a fool's errand, collecting Roman heads for her while she solidifies power. Praxos turns his head to me.
That would be very cunning indeed.
I shrug. Well, it doesn't change anything, even if it's true. We still have to kill enough Romans. How can she deny us after that? Easy, buddy. Easy. That's it. Good boy. Hey, got a snack for you. Come on, I know you like carrots. Ah, easy. You take one of my fingers off, Luther. I run a crude horse comb across his back and over his rump. The other horses are crowded in because of the cold. Luther crunches and chews the carrot. Nearby horses whinny jealously.
Luther. It is a strange name for a horse,
Hecate says as she approaches through the maze of horses on the line. Most men give their horses pet names, like they would a dog. Not a name like Luther. Most men don't even bother naming their horse in the first place. I shrug. Well, I thought naming him Silver, but that wouldn't make any sense. Then I thought about... Well, Luther just seemed right. There was a bold man named Luther in my time... from where I used to live. She traces the dark patterns in his hair with her slender fingers.
Luther.
So, what brings you to the horse line this morning?
I come here almost every day. I enjoy the company of the horses. They don't try to control me. They don't only think about laying with me. I can relax around them.
She flashes me a smile,
much like how Ingrid relaxes around you.
I straighten. Ingrid?
Everybody knows Apprentice. That night you and I shared, that was just payment for safe passage to Saxony. Remember?
She turns back to Luther and takes the comb from my hand. Then she begins stroking him smoothly.
I know it's hard to stop thinking about me, but you must. Ingrid, I can't tell if you're being playful or serious. Ingrid wants to have babies with you, Apprentice. How's that? Life is too short.
Babies? Babies? Listen, Making a family is the last thing on my mind right now. It should be the last thing on her mind too, and yours. Her hand stops moving, and her head perks up. I'm sorry. Hecate, I hear her breathing long, deep breaths. My children are both gone. The wound has long since healed. Children? I thought your only son died. I see her body tense. That's what I meant. I rub Luther's front leg and check his hoof. Hecate, are you coming with us back to Britannia? I will go wherever Kindheart goes. Even if it's to kill Thorium? She turns to me and levels a glare. Especially if it's to kill Thorium. Kindheart is all I have now. Once we're on the island and the fighting is over, he said he would take me to the Western Mountains, to my home in Deva. I look at the ground. It's difficult to think that far ahead sometimes, Hecate. But that sounds nice. Several days pass, during which the weather changes little. The night after the penis freezing incident, I instituted a system of harsh punishments for drunkenness. It wasn't popular, not in the least. Had it not been for the fact that they revered and possibly feared me because of that night, they probably would have deserted en masse. Each day, Praxos, Kindheart, and a small cadre of others, to include at times Ingrid and Hecate, gather in my tent to plan and discuss. How the hell are we going to get across that bridge without being killed? Worse yet, how are we going to get inside the caster at the far side? At first, I try to keep our preparations secret, especially the ladders we're making. But after the time the work crews failed to hide the newly built ladders for an entire day, I'm certain the cat was out of the bag. The Romans had to know what we were planning. Just like I did back at the impromptu wooden fort in Britannia when facing down an army of Saxons, I spent long times inside my current wooden fort on the border of Germania and Rome, facing down an army of Romans. I'm engaged in one of these musings when a distant rumble shakes me from my reverie.
What is that sound?
It sounds like thunder.
9.
Thunder comes and goes. This sound is growing louder.
I look at her. Ingrid's calm demeanor and quiet confidence seems to steal my own. Horses, I say. She nods.
Sound the alarm.
The thunder of hooves arrives moments later at the northern edge of the clearing by the camp. I rush to the command platform, shouting orders along the way. Kindheart and Praxos join us. The ringing of the triangle adds a sense of doom in my mind.
Damn it! How do they make it this far without our scouts and pickets noticing? I ask.
They probably kill the scouts, yeah?
Ingrid says. There's no time to chat. A distant horn is echoed by a chorus of Roman voices. Then they move. Slowly at first, they canter on their mounts. The glint of their armor, the bright red of their cloaks and shields. The air is crisp, but above freezing, and the field the Romans are entering, although wide and flat, is very muddy.
Form up! Form up!
Praxos shouts as he goes to stiffen the resolve of the army. Kindheart turns to me.
Now we will see if your crazy ideas work, apprentice.
I nod in reply. Less than 20 yards away, our army forms a long line inside the camp's defensive walls. Hooked spears, with thousands of crossbow women standing behind them on raised lines of dirt. The sharpened wooden pickets angle out, begging for Roman cavalry to try them. The cavalry increases their speed to a gallop. A section of the Roman front stumbles. The horses scream in pain. My Saxons answer with their own scream, a scream of triumph. Closer. Closer. They're nearly halfway to the field, only 200 meters away now. They shout in unison and edge their mounts forward and faster. Another section falls, surely breaking the legs of many horses and the necks of their riders. The horsemen behind are unable to avoid trampling them. Here and there a horse falls, undoubtedly to a punji stick or a small pothole. At their current speed, they'll impact our front line in under 10 seconds. The ground is shaking. I feel the pounding of their hooves in my skin. Fire! I hear Praxo shout. The command is repeated up and down the lines as a sky-darkening torrent of arrows takes flight. To say the salvo is devastating on the Roman cavalry is an injustice to the word itself. It wrecks them. It ruins them. Decimation doesn't even hold a candle to the unbearable furnace of what we are doing to their numbers. Before the back half of their formation can even come to a stop or turn around, the front half is sprawled and heaped on the muddy field. It only takes one or two well-placed arrows to kill a man or a horse, but each body on the field is riddled with literally dozens of such shafts. Our women and their crossbows feather nearly every surface on the entire field. It doesn't matter that the bolts fired from the Chukonus, the auto crossbows, as we call them. It doesn't matter that the bolts fly with less force and speed than typical bows. We're capable of shooting so many of them that it makes up for such deficiency. It's a victory of overwhelming power and quick. I can barely take my eyes from it. It is with that thought that I grow annoyed with Ingrid shaking me and pointing the other way. Why would I look away now? This is amazing! Apprentice! Look! Look! I follow the line of her finger. She points back to the Roman bridge at my far left. There, unopposed, a disorganized flood of men in armor and red cloaks pours over our defenses, overwhelming the handful of soldiers who are unfortunate enough to be in the way. Left flank! Left flank, Praxos! He cannot hear you, apprentice. I look to the signal person at the base of the command platform. Give the signal for left flank, now! She looks up at me, confusion coating her entire expression. She holds a blackened horn to her lips and begins the long undulating sound as she turns and looks towards the bridge. A salvo of crossbow bolts flies towards the oncoming Roman tsunami, but it has almost no effect. The archers work well against light cavalry or in a flanking attack on infantry, but shooting arrows directly into heavy infantry from the front as they hide behind their large rectangular shields. Kynard, to me! I shout as I leap off the platform and do a one-knee landing in the mud. When I stand, I draw my sword. The hiss of the Damascus steel against the stone scabbard sends a chill over my body. In my superhero mind, I'm expecting it to terrify the Roman somehow. It has less effect than our crossbow bolts do. Kynard lands next to me in a less than graceful splat. He turns to me with a vulpine smile. I see you've chosen the crazy path again, so be it. He smacks his two hand axes together, ringing them loudly. A wall of red and gold shields bears down on us. Prickly edged death protrudes from their formation. Having overwhelmed what few guards and sentries we had on the wall, they now arrange themselves into a fighting formation. Luckily for Kynard and me, the time they take in doing so gives precious time for our own soldiers to form up around us. Praxos takes a position on my other side, flourishing his spatha like a toy.
For a moment there, I thought you were going to attack the Romans by yourself.
For a moment, so did I. He shakes his head.
Are you going to do one of those silly speeches I heard you practicing when you think you're alone?
You're an ass, Praxos. He stabs his sword in the ground and bends down to scoop up a small handful of mud, which he then smears on both of his hands.
A simple no would work, he says, smiling at me.
Perhaps you could show them your penis again.
Will you two get bent? I exhale. Honestly, I was thinking of challenging their commander to a duel. There's an awkward pause. Your silence speaks volumes. You two know that, right? I adjust my helmet. What do you estimate their numbers at? Praxos finishes wiping his hands, then pulls his sword out of the wet earth. He squints.
Less than 500.
That's what I thought. I hold my sword to the sky.
For Saxony!
It's like a dam busting. All the water explodes toward the Romans. I'm nearly crushed in the initial charge as my Saxons press in from behind. The sheer force of our numbers pushes the Romans back. The soldier directly in front of me grunts and strains. A sharp crack ends his resistance, and I see Keinhard violently yank an axe out of the Roman's head. He'd hit the man so hard it went clean through his helmet and buried itself in his brain. At first, I think to take the man's shield from him, but he's already being trampled, so I rush into the gap. I hack one soldier's leg at the knee, cutting all the way to the bone. The man in front of me pulls back, exposing more of his fellows from the side. I plunge my blade into the unarmored side of the next Roman. Blood spurts out of his mouth, and I twist and withdraw my blade, a gush of bodily fluids coming with it. That now familiar stench of sweat, feces, and urine, and the smell of blood. It's so strong I taste iron in my mouth. Keinhard screams sharply to my right, and I turn, but I can't see him anymore.
Forward!
I shout. A volley of arrows slices overhead into the Roman formation. Every little bit helps, I tell myself. I'm not sure how or why, but a Roman holds out his bare arm in front of me. I answer by slicing it off at the elbow. He cries in pain and drops to his knees. The men around him are pulling back. More arrows. I parry a Roman spear intended for my chest. Praxos hacks the man's smaller shield, causing him to raise it in defense. He never sees the lightning-quick thrust as Praxos stabs the tip of his sword into the man's thigh, severing the artery. He drops his shield and falls backwards. A fine misty spray pulses to the beat of his dying heart. The ground is lumpy and uneven. I look down to see him standing on the clean-shaven face of a Roman soldier, whose eyes are now staring vacantly at the events above him.
Forward!
I raise my sword in triumph.
Saxony!
I shout, and the army chants in response. Praxos and I shake hands in that way you do when you know you just... Where's Keinhard? I say. We both look around. The entire army holds their weapons in the air, still chanting. I move back, looking at the faces in the crowd at first, but then, after a dark thought, I begin looking at the faces on the ground. No. No, 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 I say, moving from body to body. I see a large, hairy man wearing a bear fur, kneeling in the mud next to two bloody axes. He's holding his hands to his face.
Keinhard!
He lifts his head and looks at me.
Aha! Victory!
Are you okay? What's up with your eye?
Yes. I am okay, as you say. But I do not think my eye can say the same, huh?
He pulls back his hand to reveal his eyeball, in perfectly good condition, had it not been dangling from a stringy bit of red well outside his empty eye socket. I recoil involuntarily.
"The shield," he says, shaking his head.
The eyeball shakes too, like a pendulum.
"Some Roman bastard cut me under the eye with the edge of a shield. Popped my eye right out. It only hurt for a second."
I think I might be able to save your eye, Kindheart. Maybe. But I don't know.
Bah. Let's not worry about it.
He reaches up, feels around for his eye, grabs it, and yanks. The skin and veins give a spongy snap as they break free and ooze blood. I wince. Ugh! Please warn me before you do something like that, I say, stifling a shudder.
Ha! Now you know what it's like to hear about your Roman penis trick. Madness, I tell you.
He looks around with his one good eye.
What now?
I look around, too, at the wide-eyed, smiling faces of the Saxon warriors around me. They are like lions, ready for the hunt. Like giant gods. I turn to Praxos. We should mount our assault now. He nods, too.
We can, and the Romans are in no position to defend against us.
I look to the command platform and see Ingrid staring at me. I nod to her, then look at Praxos. Begin the attack.
If you enjoyed this show, consider picking up a copy of the book on Amazon or through the website at twilighthistories.com. It's our first Twilight Histories book, and Josh has put a huge amount of effort into it, expanding the story and making sure it was edited and beta tested. It's a solid, well-crafted book, and if you enjoy listening to it, why not have it on your shelf? When you purchase it, please give it a generous rating on Amazon. This will help the book get picked up by Amazon search engines, so it will be visible to others. You can find the book on Amazon by running a search for Josh Hutchins or Romano-Saxon War, or by going to the website at twilighthistories.com. I'm Jordan Harbour. Thanks for listening, and take care.